Today, Daf Chavdala in Brachos, we are in Daf Chav Gimel, Amud Beis, and we're starting at the two dots, Tana Rabbanan. Ratzel Kanas Lesu'uda Keva Mahalach Aseros Pa'amim Dal Amos, Dal Amos Yud Amos, Dal Pa'amim Yud Amos, V'yifan V'acharkach Nechnas. So we start off with a halacha that doesn't have anything to do with what we've been discussing over yesterday's Daf, but we are discussing this halacha because in this Brisa, we're going to continue with our discussion from yesterday. But in the meantime, the Brisa talks about going to sit down at a Seudas Keva, at a very permanent meal. You're going to be there for a while. So the Brisa says that you want to try to go to the bathroom before the meal. Rashi says it's just simply not derech eretz, it's not covered to walk out in the middle of the meal. Ganaihu, says Rashi, she'd circle in the cover, besocha seuda. We have to go in the middle of the meal, so therefore you want to try to go before. So how do you do it? So Rashi says, the Gemara says, is that you move around. You move around 10 times, 4 amas each time. Or you move around 4 times 10 amas each time. In other words, a total of 40 amas, and basically through the physical exertion, you're going to need to go to the bathroom. You take a look at Rashi over here, and Rashi basically makes exactly this point. Physical exertion helps the bowel system. So the Gemara gives this wonderful advice. Okay, and now we get back to the discussion from yesterday's daf, and that is, how should you handle your tefillin? Again, we go back to the time where bizmanehem, they wore their tefillin all day. So now you're going to go sit down at a meal. So what are you going to do with your tefillin? So the Brisa continues and says, you should take it off. First, take it off before going into the meal. So Rabbi Chia says, no, what you should do is you should take it off immediately, right as you sit down to the meal, not any time earlier, and then when you finish with the meal, then you put your tefillin back on. When do you put your tefillin back on? Right before you bench. So before benching, put them back on, and now you're ready to bench with your tefillin. We have two conflicting brises over here. One brise says that you can take money and bundle it together with a tefillin in the tefillin bag. And the other brisa says you cannot. Now, just to give a little bit of a introduction to this discussion over here, so we know that tefillin are kedusha. Tefillin have Shem Hashem. Shem Hashem actually written on the tefillin. There's Shem Hashem contained in the tefillin. So tefillin are kedusha. So that what makes the tefillin bag is tashmisha kedusha, where the tefillin bag now service the actual tefillin themselves. So the tefillin bag have the status now of tashmisha kedusha. We know as a general rule that once something has the status of tashmisha kedusha, cannot be used for anything else. It cannot be used for any type of mundane activity. So you cannot store money in your tefillin bag together with your tefillin. And even if your tefillin is not currently in the bag, as long as this bag is servicing the tefillin, and the tefillin bag now has the status of tashmisha kedusha, so you cannot use it for money. So one brisa says that you can bundle your money together with your tefillin in your tefillin bag, and the other brisa says you can't. So lo kasha had azmane had lo azmane. So the Gemara says there's no steer amongst the brisas, because in one brisa we're talking about where you designated the bag as a tefillin bag, and the other brisa says that you did not designate the bag. Amar of chista hay surja de tefillin de azmane lemetzer ba tefillin. Once you have a tefillin bag that you designate as a tefillin bag, designation is very simple. It just means you verbally assign this bag to be your tefillin bag. So once you give it verbal designation, azmana, so tzar beit tefillin, also lemeitza by pshite. So once now you use it, so now it's given the status of tashmisha kedusha, and therefore you can't put money in it. Azmane velo tzar bei velo azmane shari. However, if you only did one of these two things, meaning you verbally designated but you haven't used it yet, or you used it but you haven't verbally designated it yet, that's not going to be enough. The criteria that gives it the status of tashmisha kedusha is when you do both. Your mazmin, you verbally designated, and usage. So, azmin eshar lemetzer bezuzei. Ula, abay dam razman emilzei, he azmin eafagav zelo tzarbe, e azmin easer, ilo, azmin elo. There is the opinion of Abaye. The Gemara takes into consideration now, and according to Abaye, hazmana milsa, that verbal designation is enough to give something status. So according to Abaye, once you are mazmin, once you give a verbal designation, that's it. Now it has the status of tashmisha kedusha. So irrespective of whether you used it or you have not used it, it still will be given the status of tashmisha kedusha. Bamine Rav Yosef Brei Rav Nechunya Me Rav Yehuda Maushi Anich Adam. Now the Gemara goes into a discussion which really is a takeoff from yesterday's discussion. Yesterday's discussion the Gemara had is regarding taking your tefillin into the bathroom. So the Gemara was matir. The Gemara says, based on a takana that was instituted in order to protect the tefillin, you do not want to leave the tefillin in a compromised position, so you could take the tefillin into the bathroom. You remember yesterday's discussion, we made a distinction between whether a person's going in for gedolim or whether it's going in for katana, but the basic idea is that for shmiras tefillin, and I quote the Rashi on the very top of this amud of Chav Gim Amud Beis, and also for your own personal shmira, you could take the tefillin into the bathroom. So the Gemara now talks about, what do you do with the tefillin at night? So you want to make sure that the tefillin is safeguarded at night, so what do you do with the tefillin at night? So the Gemara starts off like this. Can you put the tefillin under your head at night? So you're going to go to sleep at night, you're going to take off your tefillin. Laila is lavzman tefillin, it's not the right time for tefillin, it's not appropriate to be wearing your tefillin at night. So you take it off, and now you're going to put it underneath you while you sleep. So the Gemara goes on to relate. Tacha margalos avlo kami baile shenog behem minag bizayin. Now to put them under your legs, under your feet, that for sure is totally inappropriate. The Gemara says that's minag bizayin. That is a total disgrace to your children. Ki kami baile tachas mirashasa. The question becomes: what about underneath your head? Can you put your children underneath your head? My amle hachem Shmuel mutar afilu ishto ima. So Shmuel says not only is it okay to put your tefillin under your head when you go to sleep at night, but furthermore, even if a person is with his wife, a person could put his tefillin underneath his head. And when Shmuel's saying it's with his wife, it means even being intimate with his wife. Now, obviously, this sounds very strange. Meaning, your tefillin now are going to be in your room, in your bed, underneath, while husband and wife were engaging in tashmish. Now, all this sounds very strange, but let's remind each other, however, what we mentioned in yesterday's daf. It is true that this certainly is somewhat of a compromised position for the tefillin, but the other consideration is that the Chachamim wanted to make sure that the tefillin received a shmira, the best kind of shmira protection it can receive. So to have the tefillin on your body at all times gives it the best protection, even though it's going to be in a somewhat compromised position where it's in your bed while husband and wife engage in tashmish, still it would be okay. So this is the ruling of Shmuel. Shmuel says that you can have your tefillin under you, under your head, even afilu isho imo, even if a person's wife is with him. So the Brisa starts off by saying that you can't put it under your feet, but you can put it under your head. The im haisa ishto imo, and if your wife is with you, also. So the Brisa says that's prohibited when husband and wife are together. Now, if there is a place that's either three tvachim above where you are in your bed or three tvachim below, meaning its own separate rishus, so then it would be fine. But meanwhile, the Brisa says very clearly against Shmuel. Shmuel says that you can put your tefillin under your head even when you're with your wife, and the Brisa says, no, you cannot. So tiyufta de Shmuel, tiyufta, so obviously this brisa is a kasha on Shmuel, and not only that, but it's a refutation on Shmuel. Now, strangely enough, the Gemara goes on to say, I'm a Rava, afagav, detanya tiyufta de Shmuel, hilchasa kavase. Now, even though the brisa just refuted Shmuel, but the halacha happens to follow like Shmuel. My taima, so the Gemara says, why? Because kol lin tirun hu, tfei adif. Any shmira, any extra shmira for the tefillin is going to be better. Yes, it's true that it is certainly somewhat awkward and strange to have the tefillin in the bed where husband and wife are together, but in order to provide that extra shmir for that tefillin, and even though, it's very strange, but this is how the Gemara is concluding, and even though the Brisa is Keneged Shmuel, but since Shmuel is providing extra shmir for the tefillin, so that is the position that the Gemara is ready to accept. Now, where exactly do you put this tefillin? I'm Ravir Mia Ben Karla Kesa Shlo Keneged Rosha. So you put it under your pillow, between the pillow and the bed, but shalo keneged rosho, not directly under your head. Meaning to put your head down on the pillow, which is directly over the tefillin, that's too much of a bizayon. That is not acceptable. But what you're going to do is you're going to put it under the pillow in the vicinity of your head, so that your head is generally over the tefillin, but not directly on top of the tefillin. V'hatani Rabbi Chiya menichem b'kovatach t'mirashosav. So the Gemara quotes a brayso of Rabbi Chiya. where the Brisa Rabbi Chiya says you put it under your head, and the Gemara now is assuming that it means directly under your head. So the Gemara says, no, demapik lelamor shu dekovel abar. No, it means that it's in the vicinity of your head, but the actual tefillin themselves are being extended a little bit outside of your head, so they're not directly under your head. Now Tosos notes and observes that the Gemara just asked a question against this halacha of Rav Yirmiyah. Rav Yirmiyah says that it's ben kala kesa shlo keneged rosho. And then the Gemara quoted a brisa that seems to go against it. Tosfos is bothered by a very simple question, which is, didn't we have a brisa on the previous amud that said exactly the same thing? If you look back at the previous amud, and you look at the last three lines of the amud, and the brisa says, avamanichan tachas merash yourself, that you put it underneath your head. So why did the Gemara seem to cite a new brisa that is difficult for the halacha of Rav Yirmiyah? Why not cite the brisa that we just cited on the previous amud? So please see Tosfos for a discussion of how he navigates through that issue. Bar kapar sarele bekilto mapik lemershon labar. So the Gemara tells now stories of Amarayim. Bar kapara tied his tefillin, wrapped his tefillin in a bedsheet, and placed it slightly next to his head. Rav Shisha b'Rei d'Ravidi manach luhu ashir shifa upar sudra yilavei. He placed it on the bench and wrapped it up in a sudra, wrapped it up in some sort of blanket. The Gemara tells another story where I was in front of Rav. So he says, go get me my tefillin. So now, where's Rav's tefillin going to be found? So, like we've been discussing now for the past 20 lines of Gemara, they're going to be under his bed, meaning he went to bed the night before and he kept his tefillin under there. The Ashkechina ben Kalakasa Shlo Keneged Rosho. And much like Rav Yirmiyah just paskined on the top of the Amud, Rav followed exactly that psak, that the tefillin was underneath his pillow, in the vicinity of his head. Not directly underneath his head, but in the vicinity of his head. So far, so good. So in other words, Maisa Rav, the Gemara is telling us a story, which Rav actually passed on like Rav Yirmiyah, where he kept the tefillin underneath his bed. But now the Gemara is going to go one step further. V'hava yadana di yom tefillah hava, ula agmurin halacha l'maisa hu da'avid. So this is now where it gets even more interesting, because now the Gemara tells us that the Talmidim knew that the night prior was mikvah night for Rava's wife. Dehainu that Rava and his wife were engaged in Tashmish and Amita the night prior. And what Rava wanted to demonstrate to his Talmidim is not only that the halacha falls like Rav Yirmiyah, that you can keep the tefillin underneath your bed, underneath the head, under your pillow, not directly, but like Rav Yirmiyah says, to the side. But even furthermore, the halacha falls like Shmuel, in that Shmuel says that you are allowed to do that even when husband and wife are going to be together. So that is a second point that Rav is trying to make to his Talmidim. The halacha is like Rav Yirmiyah. Additional is that the halacha is like Shmuel, afilu ishto imo. Now the Gemara engages in another discussion regarding the permissibility of saying Kriyashma. Now here, let me give a couple words of introduction before we begin with this Gemara. Now, we all understand and know that in order to say Kriyashma, so you have to be in a position, in a state in which you are, there is no erva around. Now, the Gemara later on, tomorrow's daf, we're going to discuss more details regarding this issue of saying Dvarim Shebekdusha in front of erva. But for now, for the time being, it's very simple that you cannot say Kriya Shema or any Dvarim Shebekdusha in the presence of erva. So the Gemara here describes the following scenario, certainly an awkward scenario, but the following scenario. Let's say you have a man together with another man in bed, and neither of them are clothed, so, and what they're going to do now is not face one another, but turn away from one another so that they are opposing one another. Their backs are to each other, and they're facing away from one another. Can they say Kriya Shema under those circumstances? Now, there are two important points to make over here, both of them made by Tosfos. Take a look at the second Tosfos on the Amud, and Tosfos notes the following. Look, the Gemara over here is obviously having this discussion because what the Gemara now is concerned about is one man seeing the erva of another man. So Tosus wonders, well, look, if they're both not clothed, don't you have the issue of one man seeing his own erva? And why does the Gemara skirt around what seems to be a very basic issue? So Tosus answers, okay, so to obviate that issue, so Tosfos answers very simply that you could say that their bodies were under the blanket, but their heads were the heads were outside the blanket, so therefore they could not see their erva. Good. But then Tosfos goes on and says, but there's another consideration. We're going to learn shortly enough that not only can your eyes not see erva, your heart cannot see erva as well. Now, obviously, your heart doesn't see erva, doesn't see, but the idea is that there has to be a physical separation between your heart and the erva. Now, this is an issa derabanan, this is not an issa deraisa. Your eyes not seeing your erva, that's an issa deraisa. Your heart not seeing erva is an issa derabanan. So the Gemara now wonders, Tosfos now wonders, so what about that as being an issue? Meaning, if his body's inside the blanket, but his head is outside the blanket, so he might not see his erva, but his heart is going to see his erva. Now, we all know or are familiar with the fact that when you daven, so you have to create that separation between your heart and your erva. Minag chasidim is that they wear a gartel, they wear a belt that actually creates a separation, a physical separation between heart and erva. Now, for the rest of us who happen not to be chassidim, so it's not much of an issue because we wear pants, we have a waistband on our undergarments, meaning we have these separators between our heart and our erva, and so that's how we circumvent this issue. But Tosfos now wonders, in the context of this Gemara, what about this issue of libero se'erva? V'yishlama dekasav libero se'erva moter. So one suggestion, says Tosfos, is that this is not agreed to by everybody. The eyes seeing erva, that's an issa d'oraisa, there's nothing to talk about, that's why Tosfos has to resolve it by simply saying that the head was outside the blanket. Libero se'erva, so one suggestion, says Tosfos, is, okay, could be that the maksha of our Gemara doesn't subscribe to libero se'erva. Good. A second possibility of Tosfos is that inami chotzeis bebigdo keneged libo. It could very well be that what he did is he pressed down on the sheet so that he pressed it down on the stomach, so therefore a physical separation was maintained between his heart and his erva. Okay, so good. So but those are two very important points of Tosfos in terms of libero za erva and einayim roe za erva. But now that we're there, so now we move on to the Gemara's question. So the Gemara wants to now know that you have a scenario where your two men are in a bed together, they're both not clothed, so you have the erva of one, you have the erva of the other, and they're now not facing one another. So the Gemara quotes the name of Shmuel Afilu Yishtoimo. Now this is going to sound very familiar. It sounds very reminiscent of what Shmuel said on the bottom of the previous Amud. But remember, and let's see if we can keep this clear. Previously, Shmuel was having the discussion of having your tefillin in your bed with you. And can you have your tefillin underneath your pillow, wrapped up and underneath your pillow, while the husband is having tashmish with his wife in bed? That was the discussion on that was Shmuel's statement of Afilu Yishtoimo. Here, Shmuel's statement of Afilu Yishtoimo means that, can a man say Kriya Shema while in bed with, well, the question was another man? Shmuel now is not addressing that particular question, but what Shmuel's saying is that a man can say Kriya Shema even if he's in bed with his wife and neither of them are clothed. So, Maskavla Rav Yosef, so the Gemara says, good. That's Shmuel's position, that you can. But Shmuel didn't say it in our case. Shmuel wasn't talking about our case of two people in a bed together. Shmuel said specifically in the case of husband and wife. So Maskavar of Yosef Ishta Volomi by Acher Adrab Ishta Kagufo Achilav Kagufo. So the Gemara says very simply, you can make a very easy distinction between the case of Shmuel and our discussion. If a man's together with his wife in bed, so we have the principle of Ishta Kagufo, which means that, yes, it's true, the husband and wife are certainly going to be attracted to one another, but in terms of halacha, in terms of hashkafa, they are considered like one unit, like one entity. So it's as if the husband is not with a stranger, not with another person, another erva, but basically ishto kagufo, it's like his own. And the way Rashi describes it is that there's going to be less hirur, being that he's so acclimated and accustomed to his wife. But if it's another erva, it's a foreign erva in bed with him, so maybe no, maybe we are apt to be more machmir and would not allow him to say Kriya Shema under those circumstances. Meisvei, the Gemara challenges, Shnaim Sheishin, Mimita Echa, Zemach, Zepan of Vekore, Vizemach, Zepan of Vekore, Vitanya Achriti. Now, first of all, before we move on to the second Brisa, this first Brisa gives full permission, full allowance, where two are in bed together, if each one of them face the other way, you could say Shema. That's Brisa number one. V'tanya achrita hayashem emito banav neveso bitzido. If a man were in bed together with his children, and the b'nei beso, and we're going to get to the b'nei, what that b'nei beso means in just a moment. So, v'hareze lo yikor kriya Shema ila imkein haisa talis mafsekes b'neihem. This Brisa says that you actually need a physical separation between the man and his children and the B'nai Beiso. And if there is no physical separation between them, he cannot say Kriya Shema. So here you have a basic stira between these two Brises. In Brisa number one, we were talking about Shnayim B'mita, two people in the bed, and there, as long as they faced opposite from one another, it was totally okay. In the second Brisa, the Brisa says that if there's a talus which separates the two, then it's fine. But if there is no talus, then it would be aser. So, bishlam le Rav Yosef lo kasha bishta habacher. Now, from Rav Yosef's standpoint, you understand this very good. Because one brisa is talking about ishto, and the other one's talking about achir. Meaning, in the case of ishto, it would be totally acceptable based on the principle of ishto kugufo. And the second brisa is talking about achir. It's talking about a stranger. Now, El Shmuel Kasha, but the Gemara says, but according to Shmuel, would be difficult. Am Lecha Shmuel, Rav Yosef Minicha. So Shmuel says, let's take a moment to think about this even further. Because the Gemara, in just a line ago, said, well, we have no problem for Rav Yosef. Shmuel says, that's not true. We still have a very serious problem with Rav Yosef. The Hatanya Haya Yasha Mimita Uvana Vuvenebisa Mimita Lo Yikari Kriyashma. Because now, as we look at this Brisa a little more carefully, you see that in the Brisa it says that the man is sleeping with whom? He's sleeping with Banav Uvenebeso. Now, Banav means his children. Now, what's Benebeso? So the way Rashi understands the Gemara over here, Tosfos does not agree with Rashi, but right now we will learn the Gemara, leave it to Rashi. Rashi says the Gemara's assumption is that B'nai Beso here is talking about his wife. And in this Brisa, it says that the man cannot be in the bed together with his wife to say Kriya Shema, Elim Ken Haisa Talisa Mafsekes B'naim, unless the Tal separates the two of them. So what you get clearly out of this Brisa is the idea that even when a husband is with his wife, he needs a physical separation in order for him to say Kriya Shema. It will not be sufficient for him to face one way and his wife to face the other way. So, even from Rav Yosef's standpoint, his distinction between husband and wife and two men together is not going to be a fair distinction. So what you have to say is that from Rav Yosef's standpoint, Ishto is a subject to a machlokas tanai, meaning the brisa that we just went over and that we just learned is clearly not going to subscribe to Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef is going to have to say that this is subject to a machlokas tanai. So what Shmuel will then say for himself is, I will have to say the same thing. Meaning for me as well, I also say it's subject to a machlokas tanai. So each position is both still plausible, that it is, we can maintain that either, like Shmuel, as long as they face opposite from one another, they're allowed to say Kriya Shema, even though both of them are not clothed. And there is no difference whether we're talking about Ishto, or for that matter, any other Erva in the bed together with him. Masha Enkin, according to Rav Yosef says no. By Ishto, it's true that the man could say Kriya Shema because of the principle of Ishto Kagufo, but anybody else, any other Erva that's in bed with him, you cannot. Good. That is, so the Gemara leaves this discussion off unresolved in terms of who the halacha follows. Now the Gemara has a hava mina that the agavos, the buttocks of a man or a woman, is also considered erva. Meaning when we describe erva and that it's usur to say shema b'makom erva while facing erva, so the Gemara certainly assumed that the actual genitalia of the man and of the woman are the actual erva, are considered erva. But the Gemara now, at least for a moment, has a havamina that the agavos are also considered erva as well. So the Gemara immediately rejects, and the Gemara says, no, agavos are not considered erva. It's not considered erva mamish. Erva mamish is only applicable to the oso makam of the man and of the woman. Now the Gemara says, look, it seems like we have a Mishnah that supports this as well, a Mishnah in Chala. Ha'isha yeshevet v'kotzel achalta, aruma m'nei she'chol achasas paneh bekarka. A woman can be in a scenario where she is not clothed, she's sitting on the ground, and she can be mafrish chala. She'll separate chala from the dough. And as Rashi here points out, not only can she be mafrish chala from the dough, but she can even make the bracha of lahafrish chala mina isa. Now, avalo ha'ish, but not a man. Now, do we understand this Mishnah? For the most part. Now, we all understand. It goes without saying, but I'll just say it anyway. The Mishnah in no way, shape, or form is condoning this type of activity. The Mishnah is just simply saying that for a woman, it would be acceptable, it would be okay. For a man, it would not be okay. Look, for a woman who's sitting on the ground, just because of her anatomical design, her erva is being covered. Meaning her erva faces down, it's now on the ground, the ground is covering her erva, so now there is no erva that's exposed. Therefore, this woman can be mafrish chala, and she can make a bracha. Ah, you're not allowed to make a bracha, say shem Hashem, or do anything, davar shebedusha, as long as there is erva around. Here, the erva is not seen because the erva is being covered by the ground. A man, however, anatomically, even while sitting on the ground, does not have his erva covered. His erva, just simply because of the makeup of the man, is going to be exposed. Therefore, the man cannot do this. The man cannot be mafrish chala because his erva is being exposed, and therefore it would require him to make a bracha, and he cannot make a bracha bimakom erva while he's being exposed and while he can see his erva. Good. Now, why do we learn this Mishnah in Chala right now? Obviously, first of all, it pertains to exactly what we're discussing. But moreover, the Gemara now wants to make the point that the agavos, the buttocks of the man and of the woman, are not considered erva. Why? Because look, when she's sitting down on the ground, let's focus on the woman for a moment. When she's sitting down on the ground, so even though her actual osa makum is being covered, but the agavos, some of it is still going to be exposed. And meanwhile, the Mishnah Chala says is that she can take off chala. Now, if the agavos were qualified as erva, so then she would not be able to be mafrish chala because she would be making a bracha while being exposed to erva. So it would seem to be that this Mishnah Chala supports the idea that agavos are not considered erva. Tirgam Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak kigon shayu paneh tochus bekarka. So the Gemara says no, because perhaps the way we can learn this Mishnah is that this Mishnah is describing a scenario in which she's not sitting on a flat ground, but the ground is somewhat indented, meaning maybe she could be sitting in sand, or some sort of ground where it has a little bit of a crevice in the ground, and therefore when she sits, it covers the entirety of her backside, of her buttocks. And so therefore, it does not necessarily reflect on our discussion of whether or not agavos are considered erva. So in other words, it's not a kasha. We didn't reject the position. It's just that this Mishnah in Chala does not necessarily defend Rav Huna unequivocally. Now, one of the things that we mentioned before is that if a man is together with his minor children, so then he would be allowed to say Shema even though there was exposure to their erva. But because their erva is undeveloped, so therefore there's no problem. So ad kama, so the Gemara would like to try to give an age range for when it's considered undeveloped. So Amar Chista Tinok is Bashal Shanim V'yom Echad, V'Tinok Ben Teisha Shanim V'yom Echad. So the first version of Rav Chista is that for a boy it's 3 years of age. Sorry, let me do that again correctly. For a girl it's 3 years of age, and for a boy it's going to be 9 years of age. We know classically throughout Ch'as, this is the age of Bia for a girl and a boy, 3 and 9 years respectively. So once they arrive at that stage, so therefore their erva now qualifies as erva, and so therefore the man would not be allowed to say Shema in the presence of his children once they get to that age. Now the second version has it that for a girl 11 years of age and for a boy it's 12 years of age. Now the Gemara says, now really what they're both, even though we have two separate opinions in terms of what is the developmental age of a boy or a girl where their erva qualifies as erva, and the man would therefore not be allowed to say Shema while in the presence of that erva. And even though we have two opinions, one being 3 and 9 for girl and boy respectively, the second opinion being 11 and 12 for girl and boy respectively. But really, what, even though they're arguing, the common theme between the two positions is, at what point is it considered developmentally mature, so that you would not be allowed to say Kriya Shema or any Devar Shebekdusha in the presence of such erva. Amalei Rav Kana L'Rav Ashi Hasamama Rav Afagav D'Tiyuf D'Dishmo Helchus HaKavasei D'Dishmo HaChamai. The Gemara now goes back and wonders again, does the halacha fall like Shmuel? Now previously when we talked about putting your tefillin under the pillow, so the Gemara says we did fall like Shmuel. How about over here in our discussion, saying Kriya Shema while in bed with another person and being exposed to the other person's erva? So Amalei Atukulu Bechadam Achta Machtinan Alhechad Itmar Itmar Vehechad Ol Itmar Lo Itmar. Look, we don't stitch together everything together. Meaning, wherever we say the halacha is like Shmuel, that's fine. But wherever we don't say it, it's not necessarily so. So just because we're passing like Shmuel on the previous summer doesn't necessarily mean we're passing like Shmuel on this scenario as well. Amalei Rav Mar Rav Papa Seriyosu Bebigamahu. So the Gemara now wants to know. Let's say you have the following. Let's say you have Seir. The Gemara here is talking about hair. Now, obviously, we're talking about hair in the genital area. So, hair is being exposed. The question is very simple. Does hair have the status of erva? The general area certainly has the status of erva, but it's just the hair that's protruding. So, Karala, Seir Seri says, no, it's just the hair. Meaning, just the hair is not qualified as erva, and that is the Gemara's conclusion. Amar Yitzhak Tefach Beisha Erva. We get to Gemaras that are extraordinarily popular. There's a general familiarity with this Gemara. We're going to try to explain this Gemara a little bit better and a little more clinically. So Rav Yitzchak says, Tefach b'isha erva. Now, a tefach of a woman is erva. So I'm going to first read the Gemara, and then we'll go back and we'll explain the Gemara a little bit better. Now the Gemara says like this. Are we talking about looking at a woman? Meaning, essentially what Rav Yitzchak is saying is that if you are exposed to a tefach of a woman, the area of a tefach, which presumably means one square tefach, 4 by 4 inches of the body of a woman. So the Gemara says that is erva. Now, if we're talking about looking at a woman, v'ha amar Rabbi Sheshes, lama mana kasav tachshitin shebechutzim tachshitin shebefnim, the Gemara here notes that when we went to war with Midian, so we came back with many of the jewelry, and the pasuk goes on to relate how there were various types of jewelry, jewelry that is worn externally, jewelry that is worn internally. See Rashi for more detail regarding this. But the basic point is like this, is that if a man looks at even the smallest finger of a woman, the pinky of a woman, and he's doing so in order to gaze and to get benefit and to satisfy his yetzahara, it's ki'ilu mistaka b'makom hatar, so it's looking, it's as if he's looking at the woman's most private area, which essentially is what the Gemara is saying is. On there, there's an iser called histaklus, looking at a woman for no other reason other than just simply to incite and to elicit his yetzahara. So for the iser of histaklus, there is no amount, and there is no acceptable area. All areas of the woman, even the finger, even the pinky, which is an area that a woman does not need to cover under any circumstance, under any whatever the minhag is. But even though, if a man were to look at that area, it's ki'ilu mistaka b'makom hatar. So, the original statement of Rav Yitzchak certainly cannot be going on the ister of histaklus. Ela b'ishto ula kriyashma. But rather, what's talking about is his wife vis-a-vis kriyashma, meaning that. And now let's give a little bit of background over here to this discussion. Look, previously in the Gemara, what did we talk about? We had a discussion regarding saying Kriya Shema b'makom erva in an area where you're exposed to erva. And it was clear up until this point in time that's unequivocally unacceptable. And there's no shear, there's no amount, meaning once you're exposed to erva, so that's it, you can't say Kriya Shema. The Gemara discussed briefly, perhaps, the agavos is considered erva, and the Gemara ended up, for the most part, rejecting agavos and not considered erva. But still, the basic idea is that once something is definitively and objectively erva, you cannot say kriyashma. What the Gemara over here now is discussing is the following. There are a lot of other areas of a woman's body. A lot of these areas are covered, as per the custom of where she lives. Now, I can spend some time now bemoaning and lamenting over our current situation in our current society in terms of what a woman is comfortable exposing, but now would not be the time to do so. We are learning the Daf Hayomi, and I'll leave the sermonizing for another time and for another person. But in the meantime, however, if it's a makamos and mechusim, if it's areas that are generally covered, so they therefore need to be covered. Meaning, if you would like to say Kriya Shema, and you're exposed to an area that is normally covered, we're talking about the torso of a woman, the back of the woman, the thighs of the woman, the upper arms of the woman, areas that are normally covered. So for these areas now, they're given what status that we're going to call, the Gemara doesn't use this terminology, but the Halacha does, we're going to call this Mekamos HaMechusim, areas that are normally covered. And so for these areas that are normally covered, so they need to be covered for you to say Shema. So for these Mekamos HaMechusim, there is a little bit of latitude. That's what Rabbi Yitzchak means when he says Tefach B'Isha Erva. Meaning that if you have an area which is Mekamos HaMechusim, area where the Minag HaMakom is to cover those areas, and there is a little bit of that area exposed. Well, if it's just a little bit, meaning less than 4 by 4 inches, okay. It's okay, you could say Kriya Shema. But if it's an area, but if a full tefach of that area is in fact exposed, so then you cannot say Kriya Shema. It is considered Mekamos HaMechusim, areas that are covered. Amar Rav Chisda Shok B'Isha Erva. The leg, the thigh of the woman is considered erva. Now, it's interesting because this seems to be a repetition of what we just said, meaning if my explanation of the Gemara is correct, and mekamos and mechusim are also, so certainly the legs, the thighs, are considered mekamos and mechusim. Why does Gemara need to give a separate memra of Rav Chisda Tetalsa Shok B'Isha Erva? That's a reasonable question. And for another time, it will be discussed. Shenemar galishok avri naharos uksiv tagel ervascha vegam tereh cherpascha. The Gemara quotes a couple of psukim from Yeshayahu that indicates that the shok is considered a makom erva. Amar Shmuel kol b'isha erva. Shmuel says that the voice of a woman is erva. Shenemar ki kolech arev amarech naveh. Amar Rav Sheshes seir b'isha erva. The hair of a woman is erva. Shenemar seirech ke'eder ha'izim. A lot to discuss on all these Gemaras over here, and time simply does not permit me to go through a number of details, but if I could just touch on a general point over here. What we've just learned in the Gemara is that there is kind of like a middle category, meaning, panav yada v'ragla, we talk about the hands and the feet and the face of a woman, those are areas that do not need to be covered, are totally acceptable to be exposed. Good. That's agreed to by everybody. So therefore, if a man is in the vicinity of a woman, and her hands and her feet and her face are exposed, certainly one would have no hesitation of saying Shema, as he's not being exposed to any erva whatsoever. And for erva mamish, and for the actual genital area, so that's an issur d'oraisa, meaning for a man to say Shema while being exposed to that area, is unquestionably, unequivocally out of the question, that is Aser Min HaTorah. Now, what we have over here is a middle area, meaning an area where what we call Mekamos HaMechusim, areas that are typically covered. And so therefore, if you want to say Shema, so you have to make sure that if there are women in your vicinity, the areas that are normally covered are in fact covered. Torso, upper legs, upper arms, so they need to be covered. This is what's called Mekamos HaMechusim. So just as a couple of interesting points over here, the following discussion and the following chakira can be had. Meaning, when we say that these areas now are usr, and a man cannot say Kriya Shema when in the presence of these areas, what exactly does that mean? Did the Chachamim extend the Makom Erva to these areas as well? Meaning that these areas now are given a shame Erva. Just like Erva Mamish has a legal status of Erva, these areas as well also have a shame Erva. And so the Chachamim extended the Erva to these areas as well, or no? Maybe no. Maybe their status is not in Erva. Maybe they're not Be'etzem in Erva. But the nature of man is that if being exposed to these areas which are normally covered, and the man air sees these areas which are normally covered, and he sees them exposed, so he'll have a hirurim. And the hirurim that he have obviously will shtir his kavana. It will totally negate his kavana. So therefore, if these areas need to be covered, since they're normally covered, they need to be covered so that while he's saying Shema, he does not have a hirurim while saying Shema. So these are two separate ways to look at the makamas mechusim. Either it gains the status of erva, or it's just that they produce, they initiate hirurim. So just a couple of examples of where perhaps we see this type of discussion play out. There is an interesting rush, and the rush in Siman Lamed Zayin writes as follows. So the Rush seems to be saying that that if one woman is exposed to another woman's erva, she cannot say Shema, she can't do a Davish Bekdusha. Now, it's not 100% clear that the Rush is actually saying that, but perhaps. But if you look at the Ramah in Ayin Hey, Siman Sif Aleph, so the Ramah writes, V'nira midivrei harash, ditefach b'isha erva, afilu le'isha acheres. Rak she'atzmei echol likros afa pishiya ruma, kidel siman ayin dalad. So the Ramah says, it seems from the words of the Rush, that if a one woman is in the vicinity of another woman, so, and the other woman's mikamas and mechusim are not covered, the first woman cannot say Shema and she cannot say Davish Bekdusha. Okay? Again, did the Rush actually say that? Debatable. Is that the Ramah's understanding of the Rush? For sure. And if you continue and you take a look, so a number of people argue with this interpretation of the Rush. And the Rashba, you take a look at the Mishnah Berurah right over there, the Rashba certainly disagrees with the Rush and says that no, that this Mekamas HaMechusim is only going to be an issue for a man, not for a woman. So, let's go back to our Chakira. If what the Chachamim did is they extended the Erva status to the Mekamas HaMechusim, so then you can understand the Ramah. The Ramah says that this will be a problem not only for other men, but it'll be a problem for women as well. Now, there's not hear her from one woman to another woman, that's true. But if Mekamas and Mechusim have gained the status of Erva, so therefore a woman cannot say Shema in front of the Mekamas and Mechusim of another woman. Because you can't say Shema in front of Erva. Erva is an objective Isser. And if what the Chachamim did is extended this the legal status of Erva to the Mekamas and Mechusim, so therefore the Mekamas and Mechusim also have now the status of Erva. And therefore, it would be a problem not only towards men, but towards women as well. Erva zerva. If, however, it's all a function of hirurim, so then there would be no problem for a woman to say Shema in front of another woman, even though the Mekamas and Mechusim are exposed, because there is no hirur from one woman to another woman. Good. That would be one distinction between them. And okay, there are other nafkaminas as well, but just something to think about in terms of how to view, how to categorize the mekamas and mechusim. Amar Rabbi Chanina, we're back to the Gemara, we're about 7 lines from the bottom of the Amar. Amar Rabbi Chanina, ani ra'isi, Rabbi shetala tefillah. I saw Rabbi, and Rabbi hung his tefillin. You walk into the house nowadays, and you know there are hooks to hang your coats, hooks to hang your hats. So what Rabbi did is when he walked into the house, he hung his tefillin. So the Gemara quotes a brisa, and the brisa says that's a bad thing. You hang your tefillin, so your life is going to be hanging in the balance. And the simple understanding of the Gemara is that it's just not an appropriate way to treat a tefillin. It's a degradation of your tefillin that you come into the house and you just simply hang the tefillin. You don't wrap them up. You don't put them in the bag. You just hang your tefillin on a hook. That's not right. And Dorshe Chamor Samro Vayuchayecha Tulum Lach Mineged Zeh Hatolat Tefillin. And the Gemara quotes the Tochacha from Parshas Kisisa and the Gemara Darshins. Anyone who hangs his tefillin, so his life is going to be hanging in the balance. Lo Kasha Habertzu Abekatzitzah. So the Gemara is going to give two suggestions. Perhaps says the Gemara. Number one, is that what is problematic is when you hang the tefillin by the straps. So basically now the children are just kind of like swinging on the hooks, and that's a bizayon. That's just an inappropriate way to treat your tefillin. But ketzitza, but if you're actually putting the bias on the hook itself, and it's only the straps are dangling down, that's not a bizayon. One suggestion. Another suggestion of the Gemara is that it doesn't matter whether you are hanging it by the straps or hanging it by the bias, it will be also v'chital Rabbi b'kisisa talam. And the story that relates back to Rebbe, that he hung his tefillin on the hook, that's talking about where he didn't hang the actual tefillin from the hook, he put it in a bag and he hung the bag on the hook. That's what Rebbe did. To which the Gemara asked the question, which I think we're all thinking, okay, so if that's what Rebbe did, so why does it deserve a story? Why then do we have a special story that tells us that this is what Rebbe did, when essentially what Rebbe did is he put his tefillin in his bag? So what's the chiddush? So the Gemara says, well, I might have thought like this, that I need a hanacha like a Sefer Torah. When I put a Sefer Torah down, I can't hang a Sefer Torah. The Sefer Torah has to be grounded. It has to be either placed, it can't be placed on the ground itself, but in other words, it needs to be munach. It needs to be on something which is based on the ground. So I might have thought that tefillin have the same halacha. Tefillin also need to be munach, they need to be based on the ground. And so perhaps, the Gemara said, you might have thought that tefillin to be put in a bag and then for the bag to be hanging on a hook, no, that's not appropriate. Maybe the tefillin have the same status of the Sefer Torah, Kamash Malan. That's the chiddush, that tefillin can be left hanging. Va'am Rabbi Chanina, ani ra'isis Rebbe, shegiyu kupik v'nisatis v'rak, ome mashmesh bebigdo, aval lo hayamis atef. And let me just read a little bit more. Okay, more discussions about what we saw Rebbe do. So Rebbe Yehuda Anasi was seen while davening. That number one, he was gihek. Take a look at Rashi. A person is very full, and a little bit of air is blown out. And it smells like the food that he ate, and that is correct. Rashi is describing the classic burp. So we saw Rebbe burp while he was davening. Two, the second thing that we saw Rebbe do is that he was pihek. Again, you go to take a look at Rashi. Malkuchov posech laotzi ruach apeh malei ka'adam shirotza lishan osha'amad mishena. So Rashi describes that when a person's very tired, so he's going to open his mouth wide, and again Rashi is describing over here a yawn. So we have so far a burp and a yawn. Nisatesh, Rashi goes on to describe as a sneeze, and rak of course means that he spit. So Rebbe did the following while he was davening Shemona Esrei. He burped, he yawned, he sneezed, and he spat. And furthermore, now we're on the top of Chavzal Amid Beis, or Mimashmesh Bebigdo. The way Rashi understands it is that he had a louse on himself, and he took his baggage, his garment, and he used it to remove the louse in the middle of Hishmon Esrei. But the last thing mentioned regarding Rebbe is Lo Yam Misatev. And the way Rashi understands it is that this is a new statement. And Rashi says, Yim Nafla Taliso Kishuhu Mispalo, Lo Aya Notlo Umisatev Shalo Lahafsik. He would not bend down to pick up his talis because it would serve as a hefsek in the middle of his Shmona Esrei. And finally, the Gemara says that when he was mefahek, when he let out his yawn, so what he would do is, he would put his hand over his mouth while he yawned in order so that no one would have to see the inside of his mouth. Good. All the behaviors of Rebbe. Now, obviously, for those of us now considering the appropriateness of his actions, we realize that some of them don't seem so appropriate. So, we start off by saying that if you can hear yourself while you're davening, so that you're audible enough, where you are heard, you are considered katnei emunah. And if you take a look at Rashi, ki'ilu ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu shomea tefilas la'achash, umay b'harbe. For you to daven in a very soft and subtle voice Well, you're thinking to yourself, well, maybe God doesn't hear so well. And so therefore I need to speak up a little bit. So the Gemara says, you are katne emuna, that is of little faith. Now, what if you yell and scream during davening? So you are neviyeh sheker. Rashi over here quotes the story of Eliel Bahar Carmel, Vayichru b'kol gadol, the neviyeh haba'al, which Eliel poked a little bit of fun at them, as their carbon was not being accepted. And they were crying and they were screaming, and Eliel says, well, maybe your gods aren't listening to you. So so for the person who's davening Shemoneh Esrei and he's crying and he's screaming, sorry, I don't mean crying, but and he's screaming, so he is considered of Nevi'ei Habal. Ha-mis'atesh b'tfilah, so siman ra lo v'yesh omrim nikar shu mechu'ar. What if you sneeze while davening? So that's a bad sign, and you are a disgusting individual. Now, obviously, we're in the middle of a braisa right now, but you realize right away that the braisa is obviously going to be very difficult, because one of the activities the Rebbe did while he davened Shemoneh Esrei was he sneezed. And the braisa over here says that is a siman ra, and according to another opinion, it is nikar shu mechu'ar, and we would not like to think that Rebbe fits either one of these descriptions. Ha-rak b'tfilah so kilo rak b'fnei amav. Now, spitting in the middle of davening is as if you spit it in front of the king. Also, a very inappropriate behavior. So the Gemara now asks, basically, two very strong kashas. Now, bishlam emegak emafayk lo kasha kan lo and so kan lo resona. I should say, rather, four strong kashas, because the braisa over here prohibits all these activities, all these types of bodily sounds that were produced by Rebbe. Now, the Gemara starts off like this. Look, as far as the yawn is concerned, as far as the burp is concerned, so we could say very simply, that if it was ba'ones, meaning it came on its own, and it was uncontrollable, so that's onus. That's uncontrollable. And that's what happened with Rebbe. But if you do something to induce a burp, or to induce a yawn, while you're davening Shemoneh Esrei, that is disrespectful, and that's unacceptable. So, and that goes back to the braisa. I think I skipped this line in the braisa. I apologize. The braisa, which is five lines from the top of the amud, migak mafakari is migase aruch. That's arrogance. Okay. Elamisatish amisatish kasha. But it is difficult because the braisa says that sneezing in the middle of the Shemoneh Esrei is either siman ra or nikar shu mechu'ar. It's a bad sign, or it's a sign that you are a disgusting person. And meanwhile, one of the things that Rebbe did while he davened Shemoneh Esrei is he sneezed. Misatish, misatish, namalakasha, kamilamala, kamilamata. So the Gemara gives a very simple explanation. In both circumstances, misatish does not mean sneeze. Meaning a sneeze that is what we would refer to as regular sneeze, that's a good thing in the middle of your Shemoneh Esrei, and that's what Rebbe did. The sneeze that's mentioned in the braisa, which indicates that he's an Adam Mechur. The Braisa here is speaking Balashanaki, speaking in a clean language. It does not refer to a sneeze. It refers to another type of breaking wind, but not one that comes from the top, but rather one comes from the bottom. We are talking about passing gas. The Amar Rabbi Zera Hamilsa, Ivali Beirav Hamnuna, Vitekile Kikule Tamuda. I heard something from the yeshiva of Hamanuna, to me it's as valuable as Kol HaTalmud, HaMisatish B'tfilah, so Siman Yafala. If you end up sneezing in the middle of your Shemoneh Esrei, that is a good sign. K'shem Sh'otzim Lo Nachas Ruach Melamata, Kach Otzim Lo Nachas Ruach Melamala. You know that feeling of total relief after you sneezed, and it gives you a Nachas Ruach, meaning before the sneeze you were uncomfortable, and after the sneeze now you feel great. So too, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's a siman yafe. If you're sneezing in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is also, so to say, pleased and relieved, and he's happy with you. Good. So in other words, so now we have a good understanding of Nisatesh. Rebbe's Nisatesh is a reference to sneezing, which is a good siman. And the Braisa, when the Braisa says that you are an Adam Mechur, you are a disgusting person, that's talking about passing gas. And the Braisa's usage of the word Nisatish is just simply El Shanaki. El Arak Arakasha. But finally, Rebbe spit. And meanwhile, the Braisa says that if you spit in the middle of your Shemoneh Esrei, that is a very bad thing. So, Rak Arak Nam Elokash, Yafshikad Rav Yehuda, Nam Rav Yehuda, Yomad Betilov Nizamino Rok, Mavlia Betaliso. So, if you have spit accumulating in your mouth in the middle of your Shemoneh Esrei, and you do not want to swallow it, and you want to expectorate, so what do? Spit it out right into your talis. Now it's a brand new talis. and you'd really prefer not to spin to your talus. So the Braisa says, Mavliya ba'afrak suso. So spin it into your head covering, what probably was something like a turban. Ravina v'kaya chor de Ravash in his damin rok patkela chore. So Ravina was standing behind Ravashi, and Ravashi had some spit accumulating in his mouth. So what did he do? He turned around and he spit behind him. So Amar lo sevel amar la hadar av Yehuda amav lo ba'afrak asuso. So the obvious question is, didn't we say that you shouldn't do that? You shouldn't spit it out? But rather, either spit into your talus, or if you're uncomfortable with that, so spit it into your hand. But for you to turn around and just spit it behind you, aside from the fact that I'm directly behind you, that's totally inappropriate. So Amar lei, ana anina daite. So he says, I'm an istinus, meaning for me to spit it into any article of my clothing, either onto my talus or into my hat, is totally unacceptable to me because I'm a istinus, I'm a ninus daita, so therefore I have to spit it out. But an achinami, for somebody who can handle it, somebody who is slightly stronger stomach, so he shouldn't spit in the middle of the Shmon Esrei, but rather what he should do is he should either spit it into his talus or he should spit it into his hat, but not spit it out in the middle of his Shmon Esrei. Okay, I kind of will stop over here, and tomorrow we will pick it up from right of the middle of Chavdalet Amud Beis.